I'm Emma Taylor.
I'm Joanna Shanks.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
What have you been up to?
Oh, what have I been up to? More baking. Yeah, I did a really good sourdough loaf today, and I did some scones that were really good. Paul Hollywood's scone recipe on, just Google Paul Hollywood scone, and it works out perfectly, and it's super easy, so that's a little tip for anyone out there. And you know how some scones are kind of claggy and dry?
Yeah.
They're not like that. They were really good, and I hate the word moist, but they were moist.
They were really, I love that word.
They vanished. I gave some to my neighbours. It was actually really cute. One of my neighbours who listens to this was like, oh, those look delicious. And I was like, yeah, I'll pop some at your door. So that was nice because we don't want to eat absolutely everything I bake, or I will not.
That's why I don't bake.
Yeah.
It's like you can't go, oh, I'm going to make this thing and I'm just going to make two of it.
Yeah, I made a full Victoria sponge that would have served 20 people. It's just ridiculous. So I have to give it away to people, and it is nice. Nice thing to do, especially in lockdown when you can't really do much and see people. So
definitely, yeah. I'm thinking of doing a similar thing, but not quite with baked goods, but I have been a bit overzealous with my tomatoes. And they're all succeeding really well. So you know how you're supposed to sow like two seeds, and then you basically discard the weak one and you keep the strong one? Well, pretty much in every single case, they've both been really strong, and I've not wanted to waste them because I've got them to that point. So I have loads of tomatoes. Yeah, exactly. And they're all doing really well. So I'm like, I'm almost slightly hoping that some die because I've got so many. So yeah. I said to Sean, I might have to actually donate some tomato plants to some neighbours if these continue to succeed, because otherwise our balcony is going to be just covered in tomato plants. Yeah.
Yeah, I had that issue with chili plants. So I've got like 12 chili plants, which is ridiculous, and nobody needs that. But you can freeze them. What else have I been doing? Listening to a couple more podcasts. I've been listening to Red Handed. I quite enjoy them. I've actually had too many recommendations. I can't keep up with them. It's been awesome. Too many podcasts, too many books, too many series. It's like I want to watch them all. I wish I had the brain capacity and the time to just ingest all the entertainment that's there.
I've been listening to Murder and More.
Yes.
I think Kira does a brilliant job with that. Really enjoying that. And Trace Evidence.
Oh, yes.
Gave the Evidence Locker a try. Mm-hmm. Really like that as well.
There's some other ones. There's one called It's Murder Up North.
I listened to an episode literally just about an hour ago for the first time, and I also really like that. I also tried Morbidology. Really like that as well.
There's one called Malice. Super professional. I'm like, oh, a little bit fangirling, you know, that way. You know, I want to binge them. That's my thing. I think it is with a lot of people. You just want to sit down and lose yourself for however many hours and just binge, binge, binge. Next episode, next episode, next episode. That's what I want to do.
On that note, so you know how the Mary Duncan case, she lived in Bon Hill in Western Bartonshire.
Yep.
Guess where this case takes place?
It doesn't take place in the same place.
It does.
What?
Do you want to know something even more strange? And it's a completely unrelated case. Mm-hmm. The girl who this case is about lived in the Ladyton estate, which is where Norman Duncan lived.
That's weird.
How crazy is that?
That is weird. I thought you were going to say her name's Mary, and I was going to be like, Joanna, we've been over this.
No more Marys.
We're not allowed to keep picking people called Mary.
Well, that's a good segue into the case. So you might be aware of this case, or you might not. If you are an avid, or if you were an avid Crime Watch fan like me, you might be aware of the case because it was featured on Crime Watch, I think, in 2016. This is the case of Caroline Glachan. So Caroline Glachan was from Bon Hill in Western Bartonshire, and she was 14 years old. She liked to hang out with friends and she had a friendly and bubbly personality. She attended St. Patrick's High School and she lived with her mum, Margaret, in the Ladyton Estate. As I said, so that's where this Norman Duncan also lived, who was Mary Duncan's stepdad. So bizarre coincidence that this is pretty much in the exact same place. On 24th of August 1996, Caroline's mum, Margaret, had gone out with friends to celebrate her 40th birthday, and she left Caroline at home with her best friend, Joanne, to have a sleepover. Caroline had been seeing an 18-year-old boy. On that night, she wanted to go to a nearby area called Renton to see him, but Joanne didn't want to go with her. So Caroline and Joanne were seen on CCTV leaving a local block of flats at 11:45 at night. From there, it seems as though Caroline and Joanne walked to some local shops where they were seen with other friends on CCTV, I think. So Caroline left her group of friends at 23:54, so 6 minutes before midnight. So her best friend Joanne and two of their friends went back to Caroline's house to watch videos. When Caroline left her friends, she was wearing jeans and a black sweatshirt. Now, Caroline made her way across the park, over the main street, and onto Dillichip Lane towards a towpath. It was like a shortcut that led to Renton, and Dillichip Bridge was where she was headed. It was known locally as the Black Bridge. That actually no longer exists. So basically, where she was heading, you've got Bon Hill, where she stayed, you've got the River Leven, and then on the other side of the River Leven is Renton, which is where she was headed. So I'm assuming that she was heading across to the Black Bridge, she's crossing that bridge, which would be the bridge over the River Leven, and then when she sort of gets on the other side, she's in Renton. So I've taken a screenshot of the route that she would have taken, and I've done some notes and a little arrow and things so people can see the route that she would have taken. So a local taxi driver who had known Caroline since she was little and who also knew her mum spotted Caroline at 11:45 as she made her way along Dillichip Lane. Now the taxi driver saw a man walking behind Caroline who was wearing a dark green hooded top and had sharp features. This man was described as being aged around 20 to 25 years old and around 5'6" tall. Police believe this man may have been the last person to see Caroline alive, but despite efforts to trace the man, they've never been able to trace him. Detective Superintendent Jim Kerr of Police Scotland was actually featured in the Crime Watch episode. They did a reenactment of her movements and the night that she was last seen. Now, he also confirmed that arguing or shouting was heard in the area a short time later, around an hour later, behind Leven Academy on the banks of the River Leven. So that I assume that would be quite near the Black Bridge or where the Black Bridge was. Then on Sunday the 25th of August 1996 at 4 p.m, Caroline was found dead on the banks of the River Leven. She'd been badly beaten and left partially submerged in water, which may have caused her to drown. She had been dead for several hours when she was found. Almost 24 years later, Caroline's murder still remains unsolved.
14 years old.
She was 14 years old. Over 300 samples are being tested by Police Scotland due to advances in forensic testing since the murder took place.
Sorry, I'm confused. Why is there 300 items? Are these things that have just been picked up along?
I'm not sure. It just says over 300 items of clothing and samples. So I assume that could have been, you know,
what, samples perhaps, her taken from different parts of clothing or something,
or even what I read it as, what was around her body.
Yeah, okay.
Water, enough, rocks, things that she might have touched, things that, you know,
fingernail scrapings, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, all that kind, yeah, of stuff. So apparently, I believe this was tested earlier, but because of advances in forensic testing, it could lead to some results. So Crime Stoppers are actually offering a £10,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Caroline's killer. So obviously the night that Caroline was last seen, as I say, her mum was out celebrating her 40th birthday. Her 40th birthday was actually the next day. So it was the day that Caroline was found. She'd actually been quoted saying, "People say that life begins at 40, but actually for me, it effectively ended. So Margaret has never had closure on this because the killer has never been found. The man in the green hood atop with the sharp features who was seen walking behind Caroline was never traced. So police have never been able to speak to him to rule him out. And they've essentially just not got anywhere. And it's been, as I say, it's been nearly 24 years since she passed away. And it's probably really time that this was solved. An appeal was launched, obviously, in 2016, marking the 20-year anniversary, which was why it was featured on Crime Watch at that time. They were appealing for people to come forward. Obviously, people can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111 in the UK. And Operation Fairing can be contacted through Police Scotland, the non-emergency number 101. When I was doing the research for this case, there was loads of articles about it. And in regards to the 20-year anniversary and appeal for information.
I take it that they've, what, cleared or spoken to the boyfriend at the time? Is there any detail on that?
I couldn't find much detail on that. I think as well, it's a bizarre set of circumstances. Obviously, she was supposed to be going to Renton to meet her boyfriend because that's where her boyfriend lived. And she never made it. It seems that where she was actually found is about halfway between there.
Do they know, was she sexually assaulted at all?
It just said she'd been badly beaten and left partially submerged.
Just from, I mean, this is totally me just speculating, absolutely. But you would think if it was a random attack, someone, you know, a predator taking a chance, it is often sexually motivated, and you would expect perhaps a sexual assault to occur. If there's been arguing and then a beating is a very personal way of killing someone. I don't know if perhaps maybe the person did know her. I don't think you get into an argument with a stranger so much.
I agree. And also, apparently I had read on one of the articles that the shouting, someone believes that they heard Caroline say something along the lines of, "I didn't say that."
Okay.
So that would indicate that she was having an argument with somebody that she knew.
Yeah, or had a previous interaction with in some way. That's not the kind of thing that you get into an argument with a stranger over, especially not at that time of night, in the dark, in the middle of, well, not in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, on a random path walkway. Yeah, it really does sound like it's someone that she's at least acquainted with, or has bumped into and had an argument with before even. Do you know what I mean? It really doesn't sound like it's a complete stranger. For me, if there's no mention of like a sexual assault, that would also explain if they're struggling with DNA and things like that. The water, she's been submerged, as we know, that can wash away DNA.
They were basically saying as well, they think that she was unconscious when she was went into the water. She was partially submerged in the water, and that then led her to drown, basically.
I mean, you wonder if, what if it was a scrap or a squabble that got way out of hand and they didn't mean to kill her?
Absolutely. It's a very bizarre one. You know, and also the fact that there was this man in the green top with the sharp features.
Yeah, I think for cases like this, even if people have heard rumours, it can be absolutely crucial to solving mm-hmm. them. Because sometimes there is some evidence behind it. You know, sometimes it might just be enough to re-question that person. And like we've said before, sometimes someone that's given an alibi previously, it then falls through later on because they don't have the same alliances with people or same allegiance to them. So definitely, I think that's what's really interesting about some cold cases is when later on down the line, maybe relationships have fallen apart or whatever, someone who previously gave alibi then retracts it and they can question people again. Oh God, I just can't imagine being her mum thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to go out, have a nice night. And how many parents have done that? I mean, you just think it's such a simple thing. You know, she's 14, she's big enough to look after herself.
My mum and dad did that loads when we were younger, you know, go out on nights out and leave us in the house. You know, and sometimes me with, like, you know, my younger stepsisters, and go on a night out and leave me in charge, and I was 15. because it's, you know, you wouldn't bat an eyelid at that. You're a young adult at that point, really. You know, you're sort of at the stage where you can be given a bit of trust and responsibility.
And alongside that, I remember in the late 90s, early 2000s, like a lot of my friends would go down to a local park and, you know, not sneak out as such, but you'd go in a group and you'd all sit about and chat and that kind of thing. Luckily, nothing ever came of it. None of us were ever hurt or anything like that, but it wasn't a completely uncommon thing to do. And do you remember, a lot of the time it was just be back before dark sometimes, which is mad to think about it now. Like, you never, ever, ever have that happen now.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was 14, 15, I didn't have to come until 10 o'clock. And I remember, you know, even now, if I had to go to the shops, like, say, after 9 o'clock on my own, I'd probably be a bit wary.
I would drive there.
Yeah, and I'm a full-on adult. If I had to walk to the shops, like, say, after kind of 9 o'clock on my own at night, I would be careful about it now.
Definitely. I think that is another thing of being a teenager. I do remember that feeling of almost invincibility, and like you thought you were hard, and you're so not hard. But you didn't know that, you know, at the time. You felt like...
No, this is that complete naivety.
And it's so sad because it does get taken advantage of.
And also, I think that when you're a teenager, you think, oh, nothing's going to happen to me because I'm with a group of friends. Whereas a lot of the time when something does happen, it's to somebody that you actually know.
I know. And I think, you know, for her, I didn't have any boyfriends when I was a teenager because I went to an all-girls school. But I remember that, you know, if there was like a boy you're interested in, the draw for like wherever they were, oh, they're at a different park, oh, well, let's all go there. And you wouldn't really think of like, oh, this could be more dangerous, or like we're walking to maybe not a nice area, or whatever. You would just, oh, I said I was down at the shops with my pals, but actually we heard that there was a couple of guys at this other place, and you know, they're drinking MD 2020 because they're super cool, so we're gonna go and wander along in our tracksuit bottoms and see them instead. You know what I mean? It's like absolutely ridiculous, but that's the kind of thing that you would do, and you'd just be like, it's fine, like nothing's gonna happen. And you can imagine her just be like, oh, well, if you don't want to come with me, okay, I'm gonna go see him, it's not that far. I mean, how long would it have taken her to walk that if all had gone well?
So now, if you were to walk it now, obviously, as I say, the Black Bridge isn't there, so you have to go on a longer route, like a more convoluted route. I can actually see on the map Dillaship Lone, which is the way that she would have walked, and that's a much more direct route.
Yeah.
So Dillaship Lone is here.
Right. Yeah.
So she would have gone straight across.
Yeah.
It's actually, this is a much more convoluted route.
How long is that one taking?
This route, which is much longer, is 36 minutes.
Okay. So if we said...
Potentially 15, 20 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I definitely would have been comfortable doing that as a teenager.
Although I don't think I would have been comfortable walking along the banks of a river.
Yeah.
On my own at 12:15.
Not at that time of night, no, I don't think so. Yeah. It's the fact, the beating that gets me, the argument and the beating, it really, like we said before, it really does strike me as, she had an argument with somebody. You would think that someone in the local community would have heard something, you know, rumours or anything. It could be one of those ones where someone has heard something and they're not wanting to dob somebody in.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like this is quite a sort of small community. I assume that, you know, there'll be the usual rumours flying around within the community, stuff that's never reported in the newspapers, you know, things that people say, whether they're completely made up or whether there's some truth behind them, which obviously I don't know as doing this research. You know, I generally don't pay attention to things like that. But, you know, you think, well, there must be information. It could be completely irrelevant. It could be something really small, but it could be, as the police always say, it could be the thing that cracks open the case.
I think the thing is, like, from our knowledge and our kind of background of being obsessed with these sorts of things, it doesn't sound like someone who is proficient at that. It doesn't sound like someone who maybe had taken a life before and done it many, many times. And this was, I think they would have identified pretty quickly if it was someone that had done it a bunch of times before. And this was, there was a specific MO. I mean, the fact that she was probably not even dead when they left her and then probably drowned, it kind of sounds like either maybe it was an accident or...
That's what I thought. I actually wondered if it was an accident. Like, I wondered if she'd been beaten up and they'd left her there unconscious. You know, I don't know if she was in the water at that time or if she happened to then become submerged in the water. But like you say, you wonder, could it have been that it was actually just a fight and somebody maybe just, you know, beat the shit over, you know, yeah, too hard, and she ended up drowning accidentally? Or was this actually completely intentional murder?
The other thing is, teenagers who hang about with other teenagers, when you get in fights, sometimes it's not a fair fight. Sometimes it's multiple people against one of you.
Exactly, yeah, like a gang of girls or something. Yeah boys, whatever. Mm-hmm.
And in which case, they are going to protect each other, do you know what I mean? So, I think it is the only way that this one is going to get solved is if someone who knows something about it is going to finally come forward. And what is it, you say 24 years later?
Yeah, it'll be 24 years in August since she died.
I just hope that someone's conscience gets the better of them.
I hope so too. She was a child at the end of the day. It doesn't matter if she was, you know, a young adult and, you know, she's quite independent, whatever. She was still a child.
Whatever the circumstances, whether it was an accident, whether it was someone who'd done this before or never ever did it again and regrets it for the rest of their life, that's really not the point. They need closure.
Absolutely. So if anybody has any information that could assist police, no matter how small or extraneous the detail may seem, you can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111 in the UK, or you can contact Operation Fairing through Police Scotland on their non-emergency number, which is 101. Now remember, the smallest detail, it could seem completely irrelevant, but it could provide police with the information they need to solve this case. As I say, Caroline was murdered on the 25th of August 1996. Bonhill in Alexandria. She's 14 years old and her killer is still out there needing to be brought to justice. So any information you can give could help. So, do you have a light-hearted true crime fact for us?
I do indeed. I'm really glad that we do these because when you hear stories like that, it's just heartbreaking. So it's always nice to hopefully bring everyone's moods back up a little bit. The interesting true crime tidbit that I have for this week is that of the Hammersmith ghost murder case, which is a really weird one and also actually set a legal precedent in the UK regarding self-defence. So in Hammersmith, near the end of 1803, there was a number of people who claimed to have seen and even be attacked by a ghost in the Hammersmith area of London. They're calling it town, but in the area of London. And the locals believed that this was a suicide victim that had been buried in consecrated ground but shouldn't have been. So they all were saying that they were being attacked by this ghost. And a bunch of people banded together and voluntarily formed armed ghost patrols to catch the spirit. This is the bit that I found really weird. They were armed with guns. Unfortunately, there was a man called Thomas Millwood who was a bricklayer. He had white clothes on and he was mistaken for the ghost and he was shot to death. Which, yeah, it's I just don't understand why you would shoot at a ghost, but that's not really the point. What was really interesting about this was that the man that shot him was called Francis Smith and he was tried and found guilty of murder and he was sentenced to death. So it kind of, they looked at it almost as if it was self-defense originally because he thought that it was a ghost.
Okay.
Yeah. So they were trying to argue that it was self-defense, he thought he was going to be attacked by a ghost, therefore he shot him, and therefore he shouldn't be charged with murder, which is completely ridiculous. And also they were saying that the man that died, he had white clothing on, but his wife had warned him to put on a greatcoat because he'd already been mistaken for a ghost on a previous occasion. So they were trying to say that it was partly his fault, I think.
That's victim blaming.
Victim blaming, because he looked a little bit like a ghost and everyone was all het up, so they shot him.
Victim blaming because he was wearing white.
Victim blaming because he was wearing white and they thought that the ghost of a suicide victim was going around attacking people. There's so many levels to it. Like, anyone that's interested, have a look on the Wikipedia page, have a little look. Hammersmith ghost murder case. It raises more questions than it answers, if I'm honest. I don't understand why people are cutting about with guns if they think somebody's a ghost. I don't understand why they're shooting at ghosts. I just don't get it. However, it's very interesting because it set a legal precedent and someone was successfully charged with the murder, which is quite interesting. But yeah, what were you hoping to achieve? Did they think it would make the ghosts go away?
So did it set a legal precedent in that self-defense couldn't be used as a...
Yes.
Defense?
Essentially... So the effect in UK law, it says, the question of whether acting on a mistaken belief was a sufficient defence to a criminal charge was debated for more than a century until it was later clarified. But essentially what they were trying to say is that even if you're under a mistaken belief, you're still guilty and you're still guilty.
Yeah.
Even if you believe that you're acting in self-defence.
Yeah.
When you weren't. Unless there's actual proof of you needing to defend yourself. You've just shot somebody. You've killed them. You wouldn't think would need to be clarified. However.
When was this? 1803?
1803, yeah.
People didn't have the same level of intelligence that they do now.
It's bizarre, though. It's just... do you know what? It's not even intelligence. It's cultural understanding, isn't it? It's changes.
Yeah, ignorance.
Yeah, it's ignorance rather than a lack of intelligence. It's just a really bizarre one. And I know it shouldn't make me laugh. So yeah, that was a bit of a random one. It was probably more real true crime than some of the ones we've come out with before. Nobody's stealing bees or anything this time, I'm afraid. Thank you so much for listening. We're always keen to hear from you if you have a case that you would like us to cover. You can get in contact with us by email at info@murdershespoke.net. We're on Twitter at @MSS_pod. We're on Facebook at Murder She Spoke Podcast. And we're on Instagram at Murder She Spoke Pod. Thanks again. We'll see you in a week.